Make sure you get us loud and clear.
Welcome to Used Wigs Radio.
This is the radio station with nothing but...
Lonely. Download some friends.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Used Wigs Radio podcast number 59. 59 times the fun and 59 times the pain, as Bob Mould would say, right? You know, Bob Mould's 59 times the pain, Husker Du, off of...
He's coming to Philadelphia, by the way.
He certainly that? Is.
Yeah, are you seeing him?
Of course. See him all the time when he comes.
Is he in the track?
He always goes to the North Star.
Oh, okay. Oh, really?
Yeah. He does. Remember the last time I saw him, he kind of jokingly at the end's like, "All right, thanks for everybody coming out." Never smiles or anything, and he's like, "I got a merch table back there, and I could use some gas money getting back to D.C. So, don't be shy." Like, this is my idol. This is the guy who's your like Frank Zappa, Todd. He's your Dean Ween. He's to me like this is the guy. You know.
But, you know, I just saw the Gene Ween band, by the way, which is half of Ween.
I heard he's looking really good.
Oh. this is the review. In my head, I wrote this review in the middle of the show. The difference between seeing Ween in the late 90s and seeing the Gene Ween band in the late 2000s is the difference between going to dinner with a friend and going to a friend's viewing. Now, he did end strong with a kick-ass encore. So it made the entire evening a little bit more digestible, but he is a filthy slob.
Was it Ween music that he was playing?
He played a couple Ween covers, but mostly they were just kind of bizarre caricatures of other Ween songs that he then tried to make, you know, the Gene Ween band songs. Oh, but really? They all sounded very much like the rhythm section was basically lifted from a Ween song with some new lyrics. But he's just very, very heavy and unkept and just sweaty and drunk.
I did read a Daniel Johnson said, "Boy, that guy's in bad shape." So I thought that.
And it's sad because I really liked the guy and I was a huge Ween fan back then.
So Ween is done? Or?
This is speculation, but I know that he was in rehab and had a real drinking, like a serious drinking problem.
Gene was?
Yeah, and continues to like chug on stage. And I suspect further that Mickey, who was the Dean Ween, won't tour with him because of that, perhaps because of complications.
Speaking of which, are you guys crushed by the news that came out today?
What's that?
That Stephen Page is leaving Bare Naked Ladies?
Oh my God.
I know.
Canada's most popular children's music band are breaking up.
Is that the lead singer?
There's like, yeah, pretty much.
What's the one who got caught with cocaine just recently?
That's him.
Oh, maybe that's why he's leaving?
I don't think that's why he's leaving. I just think that I think he's making a dramatic mistake.
Yeah, well, you know what? Fans of bad children's music around the globe are going to be very upset with the demise of Bare Naked Ladies.
Because he thinks that he is now going to... Like, his official statement and the band statement is that he's leaving to pursue other musical opportunities and, like, theater opportunities or acting opportunities. That's just never good.
Hey, which...
He's a fairly heavy...
I don't know if he still is.
Unappealing. But he's not like a leading man. He's not going to go.
Yeah, probably not.
Okay.
Which Ween is the real... There's one who's a sick fisherman. Like, one, all he does
is... Yeah, so the one who's not touring, his real name is Mickey Melchiondo.
Yeah.
But he's the Dean Ween. He basically now just, like, fishes and posts videos of him fishing. Like, fishing.
Do you know, he's considered... In the world of whatever type of fishing he does, like an expert.
And he's
like,
a legit angler.
Yes, and people like go to his website. Like, people don't even care about, you know, the music he did. They want his, like, take on what's biting.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of lure?
What, New Hope?
They're out of New Hope, yeah.
That's pretty odd. I want to bring up a topic right away. Are you guys following the Pirate Bay court case at all over in Sweden?
I have no idea what that means.
All right. So. Pirate Bay is a company. They run the world's biggest BitTorrent site. They have like 22 million users. You know, basically BitTorrent is people who like to download stuff, most of it illegally. It's a site that facilitates these torrents. So let's say you want to download the latest movie that's in the theaters, but someone has, you know, the files. All the files kind of... So to make the files go where they need to go quickly, they break them up into these little packets. Mm-hmm. And what torrents are, I guess, you know, yeah. You go, they find all the packets, they combine them together, and voila, they give you a movie.
And that's more legal than the entire file residing somewhere because no one is actually in possession of the entire
thing? Well, the thing is they broke it up originally because the files were too big. So the geniuses behind, you know, file sharing and torrents are like you break stuff up, everyone, you know, they place it in different parts, you download it, and then it's, you know, reconfigured to what it needs to be.
Like Mike TV and the Chocolate Factory.
Sure.
Well, fortunately, small boys are extremely springy and elastic.
There, sure you go. Mike TV from the Chocolate Factory. Way to try to get me off course here.
It's not going to work.
But anyway, this company was finally taken to court by the giant record companies in Sweden and the United States, and they're suing them, saying, you know, because of you and your site, you have cost us millions upon millions of dollars. So the whole tech world, of course, is like, you know, behind these guys saying, you're not doing anything wrong. This is fine. You know, you guys are just – you're not actually stealing money. You're not actually, you know, taking these files and using them. You're just facilitating it. And that's their defense. They're saying, listen, you should go after the users, not us. We're just this innocent company that sells advertising on all these – on all of our pages where these kids download the stuff. So it looks like the trial, they're going to kind of get off. They could end up paying a pretty heavy fine and a couple of years in jail, the four guys. Where do you guys stand on, would you, on this? So they don't actually, you know, like I said, they don't actually, you know, say, here's the files, go use them. It's just a software, piece of software for you to imagine to do that.
So if you were like the landlord of a crack house.
Yes. There you go.
Should you be held responsible for what goes on in the crack house?
Right. Like, there's people drinking at your party and your parents.
Well, this is the same argument, actually. So I think look at YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. So YouTube is just the vehicle. And theoretically, that's how BitTorrents and RapidShare and Mega Upload and those kinds of sites, that's how those are supposed to work, right? And so YouTube is... A lot of it is user-generated content, and it's fine. People do post copyrighted things on there. A lot of it doesn't get taken down because it's free advertising for the people for whom they're putting it up there, and the quality is only okay. But it's the same argument, right? So YouTube, their whole agreement is they're not responsible for that because they are just the technology and the facilitator. So I think when it comes to BitTorrents, I don't know what exactly the business application is otherwise, but aside from sending really large files
around. I think they can justify that, hey, you know, we just basically started this as a way for people to share large files, right? That's legit. You can get away with that. But, you know, wink, wink, everybody knows what these large files are. They're not, you know, the PowerPoint rush that you're giving to your client.
Right.
You're like, I have 80 great, you know, high-res pictures in my PowerPoint. How am I going to share it? Let's BitTorrent it. No, it's you got the latest, you know, movie.
It's tough to say.
So like, I'm 50-50. I don't know.
I don't know that you can come down on the guys who created the technology responsible. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Todd, you're an artist, and let's say this BitTorrent site was facilitating the downloads of giant pieces of your art.
Take it, yeah. Well, I personally, as many people as can get their hands on my stuff who are interested, then take it.
There
have
you go.
It, enjoy it. But that's my work. I mean, that's my position. That's always my position about anything that is created, is that if there is a consumer, then the person should be able to consume without...
Yeah, you know,
but I also don't make a living selling my artwork.
Yeah,
so.
But that's why, like, I hate to say that, like, even downloading things for free is conditional, but I think it is, right? So on one hand, most acts out there anyway are not making most of their money off of the record sales. They're making money out of everything around the record sales. So in some ways, the more people that have their music, the more people are going to come to shows.
Who it hurts is the middleman.
Yeah, exactly.
And who cares about the middleman? Frankly, I mean,
you know, the people who work for the middleman.
Well, of course, but in 10, 15, maybe less years, record companies won't be record companies, and film distributors won't be film distributors, and people who have something to say or do or make can get it right to their audience.
Yeah, and there's a part of me that also looks at things that are... you know, like the whole public domain rule, and when does something become public domain? Because to me, does Jimi Hendrix's estate really need any more money? Like, he's gone. The guy who created that art is gone. So why do other people still have to profit from that? Like, to me, that music is fair game now. Like, that's public domain.
Well, and what's the public domain for music?
It's like 75 years,
right?
Yeah. I mean, it used to be tied to an artist's life, I think, and that got changed. But to me, that's part of it. You know, like, how long is
how long must we sing this song?
Yeah.
How long
is Beatles music going to be like this? Like this? Oh no!
You can't touch it, right?
We can't touch it.
I mean, I guess as long as
obviously,
Yoko Ono,
yeah,
right?
It'll be
well, like, exactly
30, yeah. 30 more years. Let's have a party 30 years from now. You know what? Podcast 1449. We're together, and we'll celebrate by playing Hendrix and the Beatles, and just playing the crap out
or
of it.
Should we just re-record all those songs?
Right.
The three of us should.
Yeah. Well, Yoko Ono. She's living off of that, so of course she'd be adamant to make sure that doesn't happen.
She's just trying to fund more giant and midget videos.
She certainly is not paying her own way. Let's put it that way. How about some music?
Right, Todd, I think the first song we're going to play is, it's rare, but we're going to start off with a cover by a great local band called the Spinto Band, correct?
Spinto Band via the Day Trotter session, bringing us Give Me Just a Little More Time.
But there's no need to act foolishly.
That was Give Me Just a Little More Time by the Spinto Band, obviously a cover, originally done by the chairman of the board back in 1970.
Now, you don't mean Frank Sinatra, who was known as the chairman of the board.
The chairman.
Oh, the chairman of the board. There's more than one.
Although they recorded on Capitol.
Did they?
Mm-hmm.
The Capitol Records.
Capitol Records.
And this is like one of the probably one-hit wonder bands from the 70s.
Yeah, I couldn't name another chairman of the board song.
Yes, but you will, Todd, once you do a little more research. All right, so...
Do You Dare appears to be their second best song.
Kylie Minogue did a version of this song also. Ooh, that's nice. All right, so we don't really know where we stand on the Pirate Bay, but it's fun. Every night I do keep up and read about what's going on. And, you know, a lot of the... A lot of, like, you know, hippies and people who just want everything free, dirty hippies and whatnot, are just like... You know, they can't believe someone would bring these guys to court. And like I said, I'm 50-50. I can see both sides of the argument. But so I find it
That's
interesting.
That's what makes it complex and interesting.
Really, because, you know, if you're so involved on one side of something, it's not as, I don't know. You're right. It makes it more interesting if you can see both
sure,
sides.
Sure, like the issue of eating babies, for instance. Like, that's not a very complex and interesting issue because most people are on the same side. But if you can see...
But they are young and tender.
Delicious.
Oh, they're delicious.
I can imagine... I would imagine them being very, very delicious.
I told you before, I think, what I supposedly is the most... the tastiest, most tender cut of the human being.
I don't know.
The buttocks?
The base of the thumb.
Where did you hear that?
I read it or heard it somewhere.
Was that in a...
And that's the kind of information that sticks with
it's
you.
It's very creepy.
Was that in A Modest Proposal? I watched something very, very great recently, and I had just the best time, and I had high hopes for it. It was Conan O'Brien's last episode on NBC. Did you guys watch it?
Nope.
And this is now he's moving to the earlier time slot and
yeah.
Over to Jimmy Kimmel.
Right. So what he's doing is he left this time slot. He left New York, left NBC New York at 12:30. And he will, starting in June, bring his new show over to NBC and take over the Tonight Show. It's like a good news, bad news thing. The good news is he's back, he's got a better time slot, and he just hired his new announcer. Do you guys know who it is?
Yeah, lay it on us.
Take a guess. Who would be a great fit for Conan, for his show? Maybe
is it a comedian?
Yeah, kind of. Comedic actor. Maybe somebody he's already kind of done well with.
Gaffigan?
No.
Chris Elliott.
Close. He's bringing back Andy Richter.
Oh.
He and Andy had some good magic, good chemistry, and he's going to be his announcer.
Richter is very funny.
Yeah, he is. He's great.
Yeah.
He's really, really fun. And they showed, you know, a lot of clips this past week of Conan showed a lot of his old clips, and they were great together. So that's the good news. The bad news about the last Conan special was his musical guest. If you're going to watch it, fast forward through the musical guest. One of the worst performances ever, and it had to be the last performance. You know what I mean? Like, he had to get this band that many people like, and I said right away, they're going to stink on ice.
Who was it?
This band, The White Stripes. Todd, you know I'm a hater. You know I'm a hater, correct? You watch this. If you watch this video, you watch this
impossible.
Pretentious, stripped-down piece of yarbling garbage that they are.
They're the only rock band worth listening to nowadays.
No, this is the band I'll talk about. It's called The White Stripes.
A ridiculous.
Remember who the last musical performance on the Letterman show before he moved to the other time slot and other station?
That's a great.
Yeah.
No, it actually was
great.
Russ, stop dancing. Look at Russ go. Touch him. No, you can't.
It was Bruce Springsteen.
Really?
And he sang song.
I'm a big fan.
Working on the highway.
Oh, that's a horrible song.
No. He tore it up. It was a good performance.
I don't really say much about Bruce Springsteen. what do you call it? This goes along with that. So we can come back to this because this is fascinating. This late night TV wars.
You have
to
high hopes for Conan in the earlier time slot. Here's what I'm worried about: is that not so much that Conan won't be Conan, but the writers have to write now for
dumb it
50
down
50 to 70 year olds.
No, they won't. I think they're just. I think what they're gonna do is realize they're not. Because when Leno, who was a very good stand up, but when he took over the Tonight Show, he turned into an anemic piece of pandering to Midwestern sensibilities, toothless monologues of just unfunny nonsense.
But that's the demographic. Letterman changed a lot when he moved.
But can I tell you why?
Go ahead, lay it on.
Because NBC, you know, years ago when they made this decision, 5 years ago, they're going to bring Conan, Jay Leno's going to retire, everything was fine. You know what? Jay Leno didn't want to retire. So now Jay Leno's going to have a show every night of the week at 10 o'clock before Conan's. Conan's not too happy about this. Why would Conan not be too happy about this?
On the same station?
Same station. It's going to be the show preceding Conan.
What is that?
Oh, here's the thing. NBC no longer has any sort of viable 10 o'clock
okay,
prime
so
time
I have a guess.
Yes.
Is because people that are trying to promote something would prefer to go there on that show because more people will be awake and watch it.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, so he's going to basically
guest
pull guests out from under him. Yeah.
His guest pool as one of a guy, I think it was on TV News or website was saying, was just depleted probably by maybe to down to 25%.
Wow.
He'll be able to get 25% of the guests he wanted to get because now the big stars will be like, well, we know people are going to watch Jay. We don't know about Conan. So, poor Conan.
But for a fan of Conan,
yes.
And I would say the same thing about Letterman throughout his career, they are funnier with lesser-known guests.
Agreed. Yeah, because they don't have
to
pander.
Some of the funniest things I've ever seen was when Dweezil and Ahmet Zappa were on the Conan show.
Good stuff.
Unbelievable.
Or the woman
funny.
With the potato chip collection, or, you know, just kind of outlandish guests.
Yeah. I have one of their appearances on video.
You showed it to me, yeah.
Oh, man, it's unbelievable.
When we get back from our song break, we'll talk more late night TV with Usewigs Radio Podcast 59. I think we're going to play a song by me. And, Todd, let me look at the big song list here. Let's pull it up on our machine. Oh, this is my new favorite album. I've been playing this nonstop. It's a band called O Pioneers, and off their new album, Neon Creeps. And we're back, people. That's my new favorite album. And it's funny because most of my favorite albums slowly or quickly become your favorite albums. Yeah, that's how it works.
I don't know about this time.
No, not you. I was talking to our studio audience. No, I think, Todd, after you heard the song, you said it sounded like someone getting beaten up in a parking lot.
Yeah, like it sounds to me like two guys about to get in, like drunk guys in the parking lot of a bar about to get in a fight, and then someone starts to play some music over it.
Well, that's one way to look at it. This is O Pioneers, Neon Creeps. You can check them out. Just type in O and then the word Pioneers with 3 exclamation points, and they're on eMusic. You can download it there.
My favorite band of the year so far is a band called Good Old War.
Good Old War?
Good Old War. And they only have one album out, and I forget what the name of it is, but man, it is unbelievable.
Good Old War. I'm writing it down, Russ. You can hear my pen to the paper. Good. Now, is Old, O-L-D, War,
yes,
or
good
Old?
Good Old War. It's, I wonder if it's going to be up your alley. I think it will. Like, just really great songwriting. It's a little folky, but like great harmonies. It is a great album.
You know what, Russ? I'll be the judge of that.
Okay. Give it a shot, Jeff. Report back next time.
Hey, why don't we mention the beer we're drinking? Because we're always drinking beer here on Newsweek's Radio. Todd, you brought a delicious batch of
Heavy Seas.
Heavy Seas.
We talked about this over the summer when I became a big Heavy Seas fan, and now they've swapped out a few of their brews in the variety pack for some winter. And I believe you have 2 of the winter drinks here. Below Decks, and Russ has the Winter Storm. And they are delicious and affordable, and they're just the right octane of alcohol in there.
Clipper, they're from Clipper City Brewing in Baltimore, Maryland. Pretty local. And you can go to clippercitybeer.com and check them out. Yeah, it's really good.
Heavy Seas.
Good
beer for the buck.
Getting back to late night talk, guess which band will be playing 5 nights in a row on Letterman in the beginning of March?
I know the answer.
Russ's most favorite band in the whole wide world.
Right?
Yeah. What do you
not my most favorite band.
Have you heard their new stuff?
Yeah. Did you hear more than just the lead single?
I just heard this single, and I got through half of it, and I was like,
The rest of the album is not like that. They've been streaming it on their MySpace page since the beginning of the week. I listened to it in the background when I was at work. It was fairly underwhelming in that situation. So I need to listen to it in an isolated environment and see what I think. It's getting really mixed reviews so far.
Guys, you remember
how do they get a slot for 5 days in a row on any show?
Those guys can do whatever the heck
they really can. They're the most popular band on the planet.
They're so unimportant.
No. Don't you say that. Don't you dare say that. They're important to many people. But,
1985, maybe? When they were relevant and they were doing, I don't know.
We can't bet.
I just don't get it. I'll be the first one to admit I just don't get it.
They so badly want to remain relevant, and I think by doing that,
they're negating.
Let's just hope they're getting very, very dangerously close to being Madonna, where Madonna is just this embarrassing old broad who cannot let it go and is doing everything possible to try to stay relevant. Look at me.
It's funny, I was thinking about this recently because there are some artists, like we've talked about this, somebody like Stevie Wonder, like he might as well have died in 1980 because nothing since then has been
Bob
good.
Dylan.
Right.
Well,
I know.
I don't agree with Dylan, but then there are other artists that over the life of their career, even now, when they could be 40 years into their career, when they put out a new album, I'm getting it. Like, case closed. But a lot of the older acts that just keep pushing it along, that like a new Stones album, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. There's just no reason. But then other people, you know, like a Bruce Coburn, like if he comes out with something new, boom, I'm on it. And again, granted, that's a different kind of an artist, but it's interesting that people who manage to stay relevant and manage to continue to put out good art, as opposed to people who fall into a rut and they're like, well, this is who we are, like Aerosmith, the biggest joke in the world.
Oh, boy.
Who actually had some killer rock albums
they did.
In the 70s.
They did. They certainly did.
And now they're just a parody. Everything
they put out
is the same garbage.
Do you think that when bands do that, it hurts retroactively hurts their earlier work?
Yeah,
I think
it's hard to say because a band like Aerosmith is still popular.
But can you listen to an Aerosmith album when they were relevant and good and strong and important
without
thinking about the Aerosmith rock band edition crap?
Right.
Like that's
difficult. You know, the weird thing about it, right, is that you have to put into context the fact that Aerosmith has been coasting now. The last like decent song they had was probably on Pump, which is like 1989. They've been coasting for 20 years. They've sounded exactly the same. They've broke no new ground.
What was the decent song on Pump? Love in an Elevator?
No, I like Tell Me What It Takes. That was a good song. But But since then, it's just been in total autopilot. That's shocking.
More shocking news on Newswigs Radio Podcast 59.
Well, being a huge
Aerosmith
fan,
sucks.
Do you believe? Do you? This just in.
U2 has been coasting.
Would you put
for,
it in the same category?
They've been coasting for 12 years because I thought Pop was an awesome album, and since then it's been they've just been punching the ticket.
Hey, here's a question for you. You guys are Beatle fans, more Jonathan Winston Lennon fans than Paul McCartney. But there's a record label in L.A., and it's a bunch of, I believe, I'm not sure who's involved, but I think one of the L.A. music blogger guy is putting this together. It's a recording of the album, 1971 Paul McCartney album, Ram.
Which is his best album, if you ask me.
Right, I'm going to bring it up. I was totally,
really good album.
Completely not aware of it. But it's supposedly, like, music geeks, Beatle fans, Paul McCartney fans worship this album. So they're doing like all these bands, like LA type bands, like Radar Brothers,
covering the album track for track.
Radar Brothers, I forgot about those guys. They're a great band.
Yeah, and they're doing one of the tracks, and I listened to some of it, and it's really good.
Ram is an incredible album.
Yeah, I listened to
it. And there's
a really
interesting song on that called "Too Many People," which is about John Lennon, which spurred him to write "How Do You Sleep at Night," which is over the top about Paul McCartney. Like Paul's is subtly about John Lennon, and John Lennon basically, you know, calls him by name on his.
So this was like the precursor to the rap battles. Remember like rappers would come
east
out?
East side, west side, yeah.
And like...
you gotta pick a side.
And I guess that was kind of like one of the first... Wow, I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, Too Many People, yep.
All right, we're gonna play a song. Russ, we're gonna play one by you.
Yeah, this is a song by the band called Fiction Family, and it's a tune called Out of Order.
Thank you.
was Fiction Family with Out of Order. That was
that's a cool song.
Yeah, that was a lead given to me by Rob Bacon.
Rob Bacon? I like that guy. Rob Bacon is located in a lovely state of Ohio, correct?
Correct.
All right, guys. So we were talking about Paul McCartney, that Ram album, and that's like a little-known gem. You know, it's very probably like Beatle Finch.
I don't know. Is it a little-known gem? I feel like most people who know about Paul McCartney know that Ram is a good album.
I was unaware. I was like, there were the Beatles, and then there was Wings. And then I thought Paul McCartney only had like one solo album, that one with the cherry song.
No, he had plenty.
Yeah.
Most of it is Drek.
Yeah, you know, most of it's like ta-da-dee, ta-da-dee.
It is. And I would agree. What other albums would you say are worthwhile besides Ram? You would agree that Ram is
well, good?
Well, first of all, it's not like I exhaustively know his catalog, but Ram is good. Flaming Pie is actually pretty decent.
It's okay. His most recent album is where he is under he records under the pseudonym The Fireman.
Yeah, I actually think that he is also pushing a little too hard to try to be relevant.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, when you listen to that, I give him props, but he's trying too hard.
But I was pleased that it wasn't just old Paul McCartney
crap. That's true.
So I was proud of him.
Yeah, but I just think that
and he'll be relieved to hear that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I just think that direction doesn't suit him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
That's best left to the Flaming Lips, not him.
Guys, Consumer Reports today came out with their top 5 car brands or car makers.
Speaking of Paul McCartney, go ahead.
Guess how many American car makers were in
this? Zero.
Zero, that's right. Can you guys
Are there even any more American car makers? Or are they all...
Wait, so what was your question?
What are the top 5, according to Consumer Reports, car makers?
Like Toyota? Top 5 in terms of what?
Overall quality and consumer happiness with the product.
Toyota, Honda, okay. Toyota, Nissan.
Toyota number 3. Honda
Jack.
Number 1. No Nissan.
No.
But the
Saturn?
No, Saturn's probably gone.
Volvo?
They're
really?
Going to get rid of that as a...
Volkswagen?
No. Number 2, Subaru.
Oh, yeah.
For all you for all you people.
Mitsubishi?
No, Mazda's number 3. Number 5 is Mercedes.
How about Datsun?
Datsun
didn't make it again this year.
They were at the Philly Car Show.
Yeah, but they were talking... whoever owns Chrysler or whatever company that Saturn is a subsidiary of, they're most likely going to do away with them, and Hummer is probably another brand that's gone.
Yeah, I hate to see them go.
Won't shed a tear with them.
But
assholes across the entire world are saying
no.
It's funny though, like when you see giant gas guzzling behemoth cars that don't belong in a city or a suburban, you know, environment. You know, you used to get so angry. Now you look at him and don't you just feel like, ha ha. I mean, like a real Nelson Muntz ha ha, you know? Like,
ha ha!
Like, you just, it's got to be painful to have one of those things. So that makes me happy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought I would just, you know, bringing up the car makers and that brings up the economy, and that really puts us in a really bummed out feeling right now, right? All right. You know what? I'm all riled up. I need a nice bit of music to calm me down. What do we got up on the next song list there, Todd?
Next up, The Mountain by Heartless Bastards.
Early in the morning, I walk on Bumble. All my thoughts are running back, they're running through my head. We don't have to agree. Since you know it all, it's a curing disease. Oh, you're hurting my ears with your endless speech. And you look sophisticated as you're under the arches. You're sitting down now as everyone marches. And you're no more than me. Oh, no. For a soul, a door is coming.
That was the Heartless Bastards with The Mountain, and they were kind enough to send us a CD for us to listen to and enjoy and review and play.
They are, they're out of, I believe, Cincinnati, Ohio.
They have a good buzz. They're riding the wave.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be at South by Southwest. That's where all the cool people go.
Yeah, I can't help but laugh when I get emails from all these publishing companies. They're like, hey, we're expecting we'll see you guys in South by Southwest. I'm like, yeah, we have jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just automatically assume that it is our job to chat about music.
Yeah, I find that flattering, but not the case.
But they're also not individually sent to us, I'm sure.
Well, some of them are.
You know what? I always say yes, and then I give them a place, a date, and a time that we're hosting a giant event, and all these other bands meet us.
Let's use Wings Tent.
Yes.
We have a giant moon bounce,
and then we'll hammer them with emails. Where were you guys?
What I mean, there's nothing that's cool.
Would you go if you could?
A few years ago, I would have when it was a little more or less. Now it's it started out obviously as a place for bands to go and get discovered. Like, mid-major labels, indie labels to go down there and look for bands to sign. Now
it's too
commercial? Every band down there is already signed.
Okay.
I mean, pretty much. I mean, there's still, your little pockets of, real indie stuff. But most of it is for labels to showcase their already signed bands and be, look at us, look at, all.
So if you could go to one festival in the United States of America, which one would you go to?
Probably the Man Knitters Festival in Central PA. Well, no, it's just something I find. It's men. We get together, we knit, and we just kind of talk, and we play some ancient instruments that don't require electricity. A lot of them are handmade. And it's just, I'm a real, I love the crafts, and I love knitting and crafts and lutes and stuff like that. So that's probably where I go, Russ.
You go to Lute Fest.
I do.
I go to Bocce Ball Fest.
Bocce Ball Fest?
Northern Michigan.
That's full contact Bocce Ball Fest?
Full contact.
That's where the Italians get on one side and the other, and they just launch balls at each other. Todd, is this true?
Because I'm Italian.
Yes.
I don't know the answer.
Of course.
I'm not even up enough on what the festivals are to say which one I would
What would you go to? Is it a Quirk
Maybe
Fest?
Maybe Austin? City Limits?
Austin, is that a festival?
Isn't Austin?
I think that's a recurring
Austin Music Festival? Austin?
That's South by Southwest. That's what South by Southwest is. Yeah.
Now, what's City Limits one? What's City Limits one?
Well, there used to be Austin City Limits, was an old TV show. Yeah.
For crying out loud, I wouldn't go. Then I don't know. How's that for a recommendation? Two made up ones and one completely.
Todd's like, I don't know. I'd like to go to one that's a TV show if I could jump in that.
I could choose.
I'd like to go to Gilligan's Island.
Hey, Russ.
Chips Festival.
Russ, how could I get in a TV show? I jump in the box and maybe listen to Boz Skaggs for a while on Austin City Limits? That'd be great.
Yeah, say goodbye to all the emails that we get inviting us to music festivals.
Boy, these guys know nothing about music festivals. Todd's like, Russ is like, I'm going to Lollapalooza. I'm like, I don't know, I'll probably go to the US Festival this year and then followed up by a Live Aid, I guess.
Like
I don't
Burning
know.
Cans? Is that one?
Burning Man is the dumbest thing in the world.
Are there bands at Burning Man?
No. You know what Burning Man's good for? It's a good way for me to pinpoint, hey, Sibles? Where's everybody in the world? Here's it's No, it's hey, Jeff, where's everybody in the world that you hate now? Could you put them in one spot? Oh yeah, they are. What did he say?
It's a good way to pinpoint syphilis.
It really is. It's a gathering of nothing. It's a gathering of, just odd... Not
location
even,
nowhere, which on top of it, right?
Right, and it culminates in this... People spend all week building this giant structure to burn. And when they interviewed the people, they're like... They're, you know the whole group of... You're an art person, Todd. And then there's a group of artsy people. Artsy people are people who enjoy art and pretend to make stuff that they call art, but it really isn't. They're just artsy. You get a lot of those lunatics out there who are just like, well, you know what? I'm a welder by day.
Yeah.
And I come out here and I do my art in a public spot where other people can. So I took this old, and you look at it, it's like he spot welded a soda can, an old baby head, and some coat hangers together on his bike. And he's like, this is,
You know how artists can tell the difference between artsy and artists?
I'd love to know.
They own or wear crystals. That immediately moves from one category to the other.
Yeah. Now, that's a good website. It really is. You just put up a picture of two people, be like, artist or artsy, and you're like, it's easy to tell. You're not going to be fooling anybody. Real quick, you know, we joke around about old bands still touring and making money and stuff. You know, like, there, you like, if you're, like, Journey was in the top five money-making tours of this past year. Journey.
Yeah.
With a lead singer who's this little Asian guy.
Who sounds...
exactly like, I mean, more than, you know, really Steve Perry on his best day, he says. But he doesn't really speak English. He's 3 feet tall, and he looks nothing like, you know, the Journey guy. And when he talks, he's like, hello, hello, hello. And then when he's singing, he's like, I'm beside you, you know, whatever, that crappy music. And
that's a great impression.
And that's the, like, supposedly that now, that because of The Sopranos, that Journey song, Don't Stop, is like the most downloaded song of all time.
Because of The Sopranos?
The final episode of The Sopranos, that was the last song played in a jukebox.
It's incredible how things get popular nowadays. Like, or, you know, if songs are covered on American Idol the next day, they're the most popular song.
Yeah. All right, guys, Russ is going to ring our necks, Todd, if we keep talking and so we're going to, what are we going to do? We're going to play one more song. So here's a new band I discovered. I really, really like these guys. I think they're from Nova Scotia. They're called Dog Day, and this song is called Rome.
I don't know why you
And we're back, people. That lovely little piece of music was the band Dog Day. And you can check them out at dogdaymusic.com. And I believe their new album is called Concentration, coming out early March.
Have you ever seen the movie Dog Day Afternoon?
Yes. That's a fabulous movie.
From the, what is it, like mid-70s?
Late 70s.
Al Pacino.
Al Pacino. And the other guy in it was...
Fredo.
Fredo. Yeah. And, you know, Fredo was in... He died very young. I think he was only like 41 or so when he died. But he was in like four of the top grossing movies of all time. Like he had small bits, you know, in The Two Godfathers, that movie, and a couple other ones. He's like one of those... Ron Howard brother type guys who are in a lot of movies that, but yeah, he died young.
A peripheral character.
Have you seen Straw Dogs?
Oh my God, that is, I watched that recently.
That's still a terrifying movie.
Not only terrifying, but one of the most realistic rape scenes.
It's really brutal.
Like a really brutal rape scene that was not only brutal, but showed like, you know, a woman having sex with a guy not on her own accord. But this was a guy she knew, and she was fighting like the urges of enjoying it and being utterly horrified, and they showed that both. It was a, it was really, really,
yeah.
It's an old Dustin Hoffman movie where he's this like English professor type guy, marries a British chick, and he thought it'd be cool to go back to her old town, her own little, and you know, kind of live there and live the life in a nice little like picturesque rustic English village. But you know what? A lot of these little villages have really scary locals, like you would imagine in any town. And these guys are badass English guys who, let's just say, after a while of them living there, they find out it wasn't so picturesque and enjoyable. And it's a... What's his name directed it?
Sam Peckinpah.
Sam Peckinpah, who's known for just bloody carnage movies of, like, really, really visceral violence. And this movie, it's like, it starts out, you're like, eh, this will be kind of a neat movie. And halfway through, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's brutal. It is brutal. It's worth
especially
watching.
For the time. You know, like, it's a, like, Dustin Hoffman, he's like very young in it. And the actress, you just really don't know, expect to where it's going.
Yeah.
But that thing about one of the last movie, when did Al Pacino lose his marbles? When did he turn from, like, that great actor?
Woman?
That was it, probably, right?
I think
that,
so.
Like, great actor, very low-key.
I think he lost it in Son of a Woman.
You did. Like, he just.
I think, like, the second hour of Son of a Woman is when he turned the corner.
You know what? He probably was like. People always knew I was a good actor. No one really did impressions of me until I did the hoo-ha and started yelling. And that's when he lost his marbles in every movie from then on.
Yeah.
He just has to be this yelling, insane. He's just awful.
Well, and so
unbearable.
I mean, how many stupid cop movies have there been since then where it's like Pacino and De Niro together again? Like,
well, the one
there's been five or six of them.
Yeah.
And they're all terrible.
Yep.
Well, there's only really been one since Heat that it came out just recently where they were actually two cops together.
No, wasn't there another one?
Are you sure?
Positive.
I feel like there's been more than that.
No, I mean, this was...
But it's like 15 years too late. Like, we don't care about seeing them in the same frame anymore.
I guess it's because... Well,
there's been so many De Niro cop movies that are horrible.
Ronin.
And there's been so many Pacino movies that are... Actually, Ronin was good.
Was
it? Yeah, it was. But Pacino's been in enough crappy... Pacino, we discuss this once a year where we say there's a point, there has to be a formula, a simple mathematical equation to the percentages that... You are not a good actor if 2/3 of your movie are pure shit, and if 1/3 is considered great, and 2/3 considered just garbage.
But there's so many variables because, like, if you're in Rocky and Bullwinkle, you automatically lose.
Was he in Rocky and
Bullwinkle? Yeah, yeah.
De Niro was.
Or how about Dennis Hopper playing the bad guy in Super Mario Brothers?
Oh.
Well, you know, Dennis Hopper to me was never a great actor,
yeah.
But that's the thing, you know, like, it's so hard to stay on top, and it's so hard for us, I mean, so easy for us to bust on these people for that, but, you know, these people they made their greatest movies when they weren't making a lot of money, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I think when someone dangles, you know, $5 million to be in a buddy cop movie, they're like, let me check them out. Yes, I'll do it!
Speaking of movies, I have 2 minutes that I would like to recommend to the listeners and then, consequently, the viewers of YouTube. And that is, check out, if you haven't already, David After Dentist.
Yeah, I saw that.
Are you familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you sent me that list of links and it was on there.
It is the most incredible combination of of like humorous and heartwarming and cute and adorable, but also like slightly troubling.
Yeah, yeah, that,
you know. And it's basically just a kid driving home from the dentist in which he got stitches and was a little hopped up on whatever pain yeah. medication that he had, and his father recording him. And it's a wild roller coaster ride. You just have so many different emotions because it's heartwarming but also very troubling.
Right. This is what would happen if a kid was on drugs. It's kind of what it is.
In a nutshell, yeah.
And the kind of the dad's a little lowbrow. You know,
you guys have both seen it.
Yeah, as it goes on a little bit, like the dad's, you can tell he's enjoying it a little too much. He's like, I'm going to be a YouTube sensation.
Did you have another one? Okay. My YouTube is, it's also from that list that you sent out, and it's called The Matrix Ping Pong. Did you watch that one?
Yeah, yeah. No.
It's amazing. It looks like it's definitely from like a Japanese or Chinese show, but it's not like a game show. And it's this performance art piece where they have all these guys in black uniforms who kind of blend into the back,
uh-huh.
and they are manipulating these guys and manipulating a ping pong as these guys play ping pong, and it's this piece of performance art that is absolutely brilliant.
So it's called Matrix Ping Pong?
Matrix Ping Pong.
It's like Mum and Chance meets Ping Pong.
Love Mum and Chance.
It is really amazing.
Yeah, it's cool.
Okay.
How much better were Mum and Chance than Shields and Yarnell? I mean, just so much better.
No, I would say it's a tie.
Okay.
Jeffers?
I've been doing research and putting together a list of great themes of TV show, movie show themes. I know that sounds a bit odd, but like the 4:30 movie theme. It's a TV show that shows movies, and they have themes. So there's like the 4:30 movie, the CBS 8 o'clock movie. When they used to have these movies, they'd play once a week. They had these big production songs that were
feature presentation.
And the guy's voice. Yeah, yeah. And there's a whole range of like just kick butt, like the 4:30 movie, you know, and then it's the more orchestral type of like CBS Sunday night movie, blah, blah, you know, that kind of thing. So I was putting those together. And of course, you know, you go onto YouTube for one purpose, to do that. And you think we go on tangents. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're on YouTube, you see one thing that's you're the cat and you see something shiny out of the corner of your eye. And then I'm just like, oh my God, I can watch almost all of Bad Ronald, this 1970s classic. So that's what I was doing. Bad Ronald. Go to YouTube, type in Bad Ronald, enjoy that movie. It was another scarring movie when I was a kid. I watched it where I watched it and I'm just like, I'm going to be up for days.
To me, there was no audible cue that meant joy more than the special thing. Do you remember, like, on CBS, whenever they had specials, you would see the word special, and it would spin around.
Yes.
And they'd play that crazy, like, percussion.
Well, that's it. It's that complete, you know, Pavlovian response. You're just like, yes, this is going to be great. Well, you know, it's another response. It's still, we my wife and I got married, we didn't have HBO. And then when we moved into our new house, we had it for a few months. When the HBO, the thing comes on, like, and then you're
and
like...
And you end up inside the O?
Well, it's...
that always ended up there.
The response to me was right before they told you what the rating was. Because when you were a kid, you're like, here comes HBO, we don't know what's on. The following motion picture has been rated, and you're like, come on, R.
Yeah.
Come on, R. And you're like, yes, this is great! Mom and Dad are at the Barclay drinking with everybody. It's me, DJ, and Garrett. We're going to watch a rated R movie. And you're just... And then, you know... Then when it was like this,
terms of endearment.
Yeah, because if it's like this contains partial nudity, this contains full on, you know, knockers banging nudity, whatever, you just be like, yes, this is great. So that was another one of those like responses you'd get, like here comes the HBO thing. But yeah, all those, even like the after school special themes and stuff like that. When that came on, you hear it now and you're like, oh my God, this just takes me away. So yeah, go check out Bad Ronald real quickly. Boy kills neighbor girl. Instead of fessing up, his mother puts him in the house and walls him into the house to hide him. Mother dies. New family moves into the house. They don't realize Bad Ronald is still living. Killer lives in the walls.
Love it. Who do you call for investigation?
Oh, I know you call.
What is he eating?
Wall busters. Who are you going to call? Wall busters.
We should head to Shouts.
Shouts, yes. Russ, do you have a shout?
Yes, I do. There is a website called F My Life. and basically, it's kind of like a cross between Twitter and Post Secret, where people just do these, there's a character limit, and they just kind of talk about something that happened to them that day. Today, I did this, and almost all of them are these punchline type things that almost could be jokes. Some of them definitely are fabricated, but some of them are not. And it's fairly fascinating. It's a good way to blow 10 to 15 minutes. So, fmylife.com.
Nice. Todd?
Sunday night, I ventured out to Sci-Fi Philly.
You went out on Sunday night. God bless you.
Tucked into West Philadelphia. It starts at 9 o'clock in West Philadelphia at a Ethiopian place, which, by the way, serves very authentic Ethiopian food, which is great. The place is called Gojo, I believe. G-O-J-J-O. But anyway, upstairs is a little Ethiopian joint. I get there a little early, enjoy a meal, and I'm looking around thinking, this is supposed to be this avant-garde, this very coveted avant-garde jazz performance. Every week they have different international acts come in. And it just, the place is stark bright and light, and it doesn't seem like anyone's there that has anything to do with jazz. And next thing you know, like, in a heartbeat, the lights go down, people load their instruments in, and they start playing. And the place is jam-packed with not only 25 people in a room that really basically holds 12, but every one of them were, like, they seem like jazz nerds. And I mean that as a compliment. Like, people who were into music. And the way I know that was, like, they all came individually, but seemed to all know each other. Many of them were, like, jotting notes down.
Cool.
Many of them were recording video camera and audio devices, and the music was phenomenal. So I checked out a band there, and I did a doodle and a drawing. I posted it on my website, but
yeah,
it was really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's so, just, it's freeform jazz?
It's... Yeah, it's loose. You know, it's very loose. It's experimental. It's avant-garde jazz. Mm-hmm. But again, they're international acts, and it just seemed like I had stumbled into a thing where, like, if you're in the know, almost like kind of a secret knock. Like, if you know about jazz,
did you
appreciate it.
Did you eat there first?
I did. Yeah,
that sounds like a great night.
It was a great night. Yeah.
Ethiopian food is fun. It's a giant like pancake. You throw all the food in the middle, and then you pick apart the pancake and you grab the food with it, and you just kind of eat towards the center.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Boy, that sounds like fun. A Sunday night. I might have to do it.
Jeffy?
No, I'm just thinking about going out on a Sunday night. That'd be awesome. Hey, 60 Minutes, you're going to have to wait. let me see. My shout-outs, just two. And Todd almost ruined them before. Todd and I were geeking out about iPhone, stuff like that. And Todd's like,
hey, Jeff, did you know there's a WordPress and there's a this other one, Stanza apps?
So I'm like, damn it, Todd, yes. And they were my shouts tonight. That was my Todd impersonation.
That was eerie.
It was hard to tell who was who. I got my iTouch, and my favorite apps are... I like WordPress app, very easy to use. You can update any WordPress site using that. But more importantly, Stanza is a free app, and you load it, and you can go and get many magazines, and you can get many, many wonderful books. The Russ, we were talking about, most of these books have passed... their copyright date, 50 to 75 years, so they're free. So all the classics are up there. I mean, everything from H.G. Wells to Flaubert to, any American writer, Hemingway. Yeah, all that great stuff. So
standards, yeah.
And, you know, it's great. It's very easy to read. I mean, the usability's there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, the text is big enough. You swipe the screen, go to the next page.
It is backlit, though. So if you read for an hour, your eyes will be fatigued, probably, I think.
Well, that's the part of the reason I like it is I read myself to sleep. Much like, you know, if you were a baby, you'd be read, you know, rocked to sleep. I can't be rocked to sleep anymore. We stopped that. My wife stopped that last month.
I can come over and put a stop to
that. So I think Stanza's great. I mean, it's just like, wow, great way. And that also touched upon a thing earlier when we were talking about copyrights and stuff like that. Cory Doctorow, he's a writer, science fiction writer, wrote Little Brother. He talked about every time he puts a book out, you know, it's published, he puts it online for free, the whole book, for people to read it. And he's like, I'd love to say it's a benevolent thing where I'm some, like, hippie guy. He's like, yeah, everything needs to be free. He's kind of like you, Todd. He's like, you know what? Everyone who starts reading that book, it gets the word out. Lo and behold, they'll read some of it online, and they'll be like, you know what? I'm just going to go buy this book.
Exactly.
And he goes,
or gift it.
Yeah, and he said, it's done nothing but increase my sales tenfold. So for all these people who are, you know, freaking out about stuff leaking, they're online, blah, 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 he's like, have at it. He goes, if you know how to manage it correctly, you can turn into a positive tenfold.
Yep.
And that's Cory Doctorow. He's a great writer. So I guess that's it, guys. That's podcast 59.
That'll do it.
And next time you see us, we will be drinking different beer, probably talking about similar stuff. See ya.